three stages. Parenting stage one, where we're really just striving to teach our children that authority is a good thing, that life is better, blessings experienced when they obey us as their parents and learn to respond well to authority in the world around them. Then we move on, almost seamlessly, no, not seamlessly, on their sixth birthday, but we're moving on then to think about encouraging them towards good character. So I've just reminded us, if you were here last time there on the handouts, we're trying to nurture their head and their heart. We're seeking to train them really to look beyond themselves and encouraging good character traits in them. Things like selflessness, rather self-centeredness, and those kind of things that we chatted about a little bit last time. And in all of this, and it's really helpful to get an idea of where the goal is. It's there with a kind of arrow at the top of the, almost at the top of the first page. The goal is maturity and independence. That is what we're aiming at. We want them to be able to function well on their own in the world when we're not around to pick up the pieces for them. So that's what we're aiming at. We're trying to raise mature and independent adults. So it can feel like mission impossible, but it's better to think mature and independent adults is where we're going. We actually are preparing them to leave our care. That might feel really weird if your children are really small at the moment, but that's what we're aiming at. It's a kind of 18-year project in some ways, or maybe an 18-year apprenticeship would be a better way of talking about it. Well, today we're moving on to the teenage years, 13s to 18s. Again, in some ways, this age range is almost too big to think about in one go. It's a massive age range. The difference between a 13-year-old and an 18-year-old is huge. Massive changes, we all know, physically, emotionally, relationally, educationally, everything changes in that zone for them. And again, things will change for them at different ages and stages and different paces within that zone. Every one of our children is going to be an individual. That is how God has made them. It therefore means that as we think about the principles, we will have to apply them to the individual as we go. It's also worth saying that it is, I think, an utterly confusing time for them. And we mustn't underestimate that. It's confusing for them and us. Everything seems to be up in the air. They're trying to work out who they are and where they fit in the world and all these things, and we're trying to help them do that. But I think in the midst of all the confusion, that's why it's worth just clocking. We're keeping an eye on the goal. Mature and independent adults are where we're trying to coach them towards. So that's the goal, and we're trying to coach them towards wisdom so they get there. Why do I think it's important to keep the goal in mind? I think because I wonder if the teenage years are where we are most likely to go into crisis management mode if we're not careful. It's the point at which we're going to react to situations without necessarily thinking, yeah, but hold on, how should I react in view of where I want them to get to? So something happens over here and we think, how do I deal with that? When we should be thinking, how can I help them to wisely respond to that so they become a mature and independent adult? Now, it is hard in the moment to remember that. That's why we need to kind of remember it when we're not in the moment. And we'll never get that right all of the time. So on the handout there, we're now at the stage we're on. Let's turn to the second page. We are coaching towards wisdom. That's what we're doing. Again, let's just think about teenagers for the moment. I think the biblical kind of categories, the Bible categories of wisdom and folly are really helpful. And it's worth saying, folly is really easy. Just remember back yourself. Did you find it hard to do silly things and foolish things in the teenage years? No. Did anyone need to train you to do those? No. Being wise, on the other hand, takes a fair bit of work. Work for them and work for us to help them and coach them. So just if you have a foolish teenager, you have an ordinary teenager. Don't be shocked if you go, I can't believe, if in your head, well, hopefully you just say in your head, but you probably will at times say, I can't believe you did that. And just think, yeah, that's probably what my parents thought and said to me. And that's what every parent at some stage is thinking and saying towards their teenager. Folly is easy. Wisdom requires work. And we're just seeking then to coach them to make wise decisions for themselves. Just think back to where we've already been. If you think 6 to 12, we have taught them about, and before that, we've taught them about obedience and character. And we want those things to now be put into practice by them. We're still going to help them. And at the younger end of the teenage years, we help them more. As they get older, we help them less in some ways. But we are trying to teach them to put into practice what we've already taught them. One of the books, and I was looking at the other day. I think just helpfully, it's kind of internalization. That's the only big word I'll probably rock out this morning. It is basically trying to get the things that you have taught them, the good standards of your home and your family, you're trying to get them into their own heads and hearts so they then apply them in practice. So that when they leave, they are ready to live their independent lives. Again, when I say independent lives, that doesn't mean the minute they are 18, you say, see ya, you're out of here, and you never help them with any decision ever again. That's not how life works. I was on the phone to my father last night about something. You know, it still happens, but it happens differently. Again, why do we want to, why are we trying to do all this coaching? Well, the third bullet there, I think, is really helpful. We're trying to hand over responsibility and autonomy to them whilst they're still in our, it's a real mouthful, isn't it, protective coaching care. What do I mean by that? Teenagers will make foolish mistakes. Teenagers need to learn. And when do we want them to have those learning moments? I think we want to have those learning moments when we can help them learn from them. When we can help pick up the piece if we need to, or encourage them where they've done a good job, so that they don't end up having all those crisis moments when they've left our care. So we need to be giving freedom and autonomy to them in different stages and in different ways, but in order that we can still help them while they're in our protective care. And in many ways, we're just building on the foundation that we've already laid. Let's think about their struggles. I think if we're going to really understand our teenagers, we need to understand what it is that is tough about being a teenager and where their blind spots are potentially. In many ways, they are the same as they would have been for us. It may look slightly different in the world in which they live, but fundamentally, nothing has really changed about humanity since we were teenagers. Let's have a look at the first one. They don't naturally hunger for wisdom and correction. There aren't many teenagers out there who, when they have done something or when they need a bit of guidance, come to you and say, could we please sit down at the dining room table and could you talk me through again just how to avoid gossip and how I can wisely interact with my friends? Could you just run that by me again? Or come to you and say, I do realise that actually the way that I'm interacting with my siblings isn't really what it should be. It's not the mature, independent, adult way of interacting that I would love to exhibit. Could you just talk me through that again? That isn't standard teenage behaviour. Therefore, we need to realise that. And in some ways, we need to sell them wisdom and correction. What do I mean by that? We need to make them realise that it is a good thing. So I think it's a little bit, in some ways, parenting doesn't hugely change between the stages. What are we doing with the youngest children? We are trying to help them see that obedience leads to blessing. And we tell them that, not in the crisis moment, but in the everyday of life. What are we trying to do with our teenagers? I think we want to keep communicating the goal to them. Saying to them, we want you to be able to interact well in the world. We want you to be independent. We want you to be mature. We want to give you respect and trust and responsibility. That is what we want for you. So keep selling them that, so they understand that the wisdom and correction you try and impart to them is aiming towards that. So keep the goal in view for them. And I think we've got to keep encouraging them to understand that wisdom has consequences just as folly has fallout. We need to help them see that to be wise leads to better outcomes. And again, I think I've already almost started negatively saying, so when they have this crisis moment, how are we going to help them? Actually, just like with younger children, when we should always praise them for the good that they do, which we often forget, I think we've got to learn to praise our teenagers when they are wise. Your teenager comes home and says that they are in a situation where other people are being foolish and they decided to not join in. Man, ring the alarm bells, you know, get the party going, get the cake out. That is an amazing thing. Encourage them. They have been wise, and encourage them in there and help them see that was a brilliant thing. And when they do mess up, gently try and expose the folly to them. Not always in the moment, sometimes afterwards, but just help them see and join up the dots. I also think parenting is always about honesty. We need to be honest about our own folly. What do I mean here? Let's just go for a potential example. one of your teenagers has failed to do a critical piece of work or get their bag ready or do the right things in the right order. And all you want to do is tell them how stupid they are, and if they keep doing things like that, they'll never get a job. That's your temptation. Okay? Possibly. Now just rewind slightly. How many of us have procrastinated over something this week? How much of us have known that there is something that needs to be done, but there's something else we want to do, so we'll do that first? And all we've actually done is just been like them. But as far as we're concerned, that is horrendous, and we're just being a grown-up. No. And I have the freedom to do that. We've just got a clock that so often what we say to them, we've just got to realise that we need to be saying, and I stupidly do that as well sometimes. So it's right to, and I think one of the biggest things we help our teenagers with is encourage them to do the right things in the right order, to have the right priorities. You know, homework before screen time, all those kind of things. But help them say that we find it a struggle too. It's got to be worth doing that, because otherwise they just think that's madness. I confess to this one. In our house, we have, once upon a time it was my study. Now I have, I think, about a third of it that allegedly is mine. And sometimes I will walk in and look at the desks and I cannot believe the mess that they are in. So then I go to my desk, tidy my desk, and then go to the children and say, your desks are a total mess. Sort it out. That is utter hypocrisy. And I just need to watch that one. But you can see how we all do that in our lives. It's easy to say you're being foolish without clocking, and we still struggle with the same stuff. So again, watch our standards. Let's not be hypocritical. Make sure you're honest about the messy room. I've talked about that. That's brilliant. It's also worth, I think, at the right age and stage, being honest about our own past teenage mistakes, if they are helpful. It's a difficult path to tread, this one, because unless our teens are mature enough to say, oh yeah, you did A and that was silly, so I won't go there, then you're probably mad to do it. Because otherwise the danger is they go, oh, you did that and I really want to do that, and you've turned out all right, so that's okay. So just watch. I think it's right to be honest, but at the right age and stage, when they have the maturity to go, thank you for sharing that, I won't go there, rather than, thank you for sharing that. You've now given me a license to do exactly what I wanted to do. So just be very careful on that one. How we correct makes all the difference, just like in the other stages, really. Gentle tone, gentle words are the answer in every interaction. That way, they might not like what we're saying, but they do know deep down that we are doing it because we love them and care for them. So things like, how do you think you could have done that differently, is a much better thing to say than, why on earth did you do that? I sometimes wonder if the second thing in my head is what I should say, or the third thing rather than the first thing. Or you could even go slightly, you can even step out, how would one do that better? Let's just imagine that whole scenario and just run things with them. But I do think that coaching of, how could you have asked that differently? How do you think you should have responded to that situation differently is really, really helpful. Not always in the moment, sometimes a bit later, but coaching them, helping them, and then probably doing the same again tomorrow. So they don't naturally hunger for wisdom and correction, so we need to help them with that. They can be unwise in their choice of companions. It's a bit of a mouthful. Basically, we can't choose their friends for them, and they don't always make the choices that we might want them to make. But that was true of us and will be true of every generation. We cannot choose their friends for them. And I don't think the answer is to say, is to ban certain people. That's not how life should work, I don't think. But I think therefore the key thing is to make sure we know their friends. Know their friends, know the interactions, and help them in those interactions. Help them to see where Billy is not the person to copy. And those kind of things. How do I think we get to know their friends? In many ways, it's just open conversations. Who did you hang out with? Who did you chat to? Those kind of things. Just like we've been doing all through the earlier years. So in some ways, it doesn't change. I do think this is where we've got to be probably a bit less precious about our homes. So we want to have an open home where they feel that they can bring all their friends round. Now, few things to say there. That probably means we need to worry a bit less about our stuff. Because I promise you this, if you have an open home, you will have broken stuff. And you need to learn to rejoice over the fact that you have that broken because you've got to know your child's friends. That's how you need to think, and that's really hard to think. I think you should probably check your insurance policy excess, and it might be worth paying slightly more at the premium, but I'll leave you with that one for accidental damage. But I do think making sure that yours is a house where there are biscuits in a biscuit barrel, where they can come and chill out, and you can get to know their friends is really, really important. That doesn't mean you spend your whole time hanging out with them. I promise you if you do that, they will never bring their friends home. But just making sure that you are available and around is good for their interactions and good for you, and you get to know their friends. Next one, let's have a think about. They are susceptible to being sucked in by our image-obsessed world. In many ways, so are we, but they are particularly susceptible to that. I could have probably put stuff in there about being sucked in by our sex-mad world. In some ways, the two things just play out together in our current culture. I'll put it on the handout. Our culture basically trains boys to objectify women. That's what it does. You can't get away from that. If you went away from here now and put the TV on and looked at the adverts, looked at the programs, then you followed some celebrities on Instagram or Twitter, you would see boys are just being trained to objectify women. Okay, they don't have to be set down in a certain class for it. It just happens. And girls are being trained in some ways to be an object, to be the thing that boys objectify. Why are those things a problem? Well, if boys grow up objectifying women, it will impact their ability to have real relationships. And if girls think that life is all about their image externally, it can lead to massive paranoia and body image issues. And we've just got to clock that is the world they live in. In some ways, it was the world that we lived in, but it has just been cranked up a massive notch by the internet. Everything is visual. And we've just got to help them with that, which is what I've put there, and I mean it for boys and girls. We've got to keep talking about character and image, by which I mean we've got to keep talking about why it's what you're like on the inside that really matters, not what you're like on the outside. We've got to get dads have got to say it to their boys and say it's what she is really like that matters, not what she ultimately looks like, what she externally looks like. And mums and dads have got to keep saying it to their daughters as well. The world tells them all the time, our culture says it is image over character. And we've got to keep flipping it back in our conversations. No. Character over image. The internet age is the image age. I was chatting to a teacher a little while ago in a girls' school, and she was saying it feels like just one Instagram post that they have made, but it is thousands upon thousands of little posts in the instant which build a massive image issue longer term. And we've just got to help them. You see it sometimes, I think, and just anecdotally, how many times did they have a go at taking the selfie picture? Even ask ourselves that question sometimes. But how many times? Because if they're taking 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 shots to get it just right, they are saying, my image is all that matters. My image really, really matters. Now, beauty is a good thing. No one is denying that. Being feminine and attractive, all those things are beautiful, good God-given things. But when image trumps character, we need to really help them. Worth saying here, I've put it on the handout because I thought it would be wrong not to. In the world in which we live, porn has just become such a massive issue. When you even have guys like Russell Brand doing massive blogs on the issue and saying it's an issue and saying it is an evil in society, you know there is a real issue out there. Now just pause and think about that for a moment. When I was a teenager, if I'd wanted to get hold of something that objectified women, I would have had to have found an 18-year-old to go to a seedy shop and buy it and then try and hide it from any adult around me. That is what I would have had to have done. I'd have had to go into a shop where I couldn't have reached the top shelf and tried to get someone to reach it for me. What do we have? We have almost every teenage boy and girl in their hand, via the internet and in their hand, and we've just got to clock it. Why is it such a big issue? Why does it matter? Because it is addictive and destroys future relationships. That's what we've got to clock. And we've got to help them. We've really got to help them. It's addictive, it's relationship destroying, and we're mad to not think about it with them. It's why we've got to, despite our embarrassment at times, we've got to talk about sex with our kids and keep the conversation open. We've got to talk about not objectifying women for our boys. We've got to help our girls not think that life is about being an object. And we've got to talk to them openly about God's good gift of sex. And we've got to talk to them about how they live rightly in the world in a way that will lead to positive relationships, not damaging relationships. And I just want to say, cutting off the Wi-Fi is not the answer. Now, I do think we need to love them enough to put boundaries in place. I'm unashamed about the fact that we have a no IT, at the moment we have a no IT upstairs rule. So no gadgets upstairs without kind of explicit permission for a kind of, yeah, okay, take your iPod because you're listening to music. That's one thing. But at night time, we have nothing upstairs. Why am I doing that? Partly because I have three boys coming over the hill and I want to protect them. I don't want them to be exposed to all those particular struggles and temptations unnecessarily. Will they be exposed enough by their friends? Yes. Do some of their friends already do things like follow porn via Instagram? Yes. Is it happening out there? Yes. But the home needs to be a refuge. So it's worth having boundaries in place. But cutting off the Wi-Fi will never be the ultimate answer. Not all of our children, but most of our children, because of where we are in St Albans with all the educational privileges, will at 18 or 19 walk away from St Albans and go to university, where they will be given a student room with fast internet and they will have a laptop computer. So if what we have done up to 18 is just go, no, 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 cut, 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 to the cable or turn off the Wi-Fi, we have not trained them. So we need to think about how we train them. Yes, put the protections in place and help them. I know teenagers, brilliantly, who will deliberately watch things on BBC iPlayer so they can skip unhelpful bits. That's brilliant. They have been trained to think, that objectifying of women in this show will not help me. I can see it coming. I'll skip it. That is brilliant. But they've been trained to that and helped do that. It's where, you know, mums and dads, we've just got to be honest about them and say that we find life tough in this world sometimes and do those kind of things. Okay, I wasn't supposed to say that much about that issue, but I have. We can chat about that more if we need to. Love them, care for them in all of that. Again, I just think one tip that didn't make the handout, I think we want to reclaim the language here. So they live in an image-obsessed world and we want to say character over image. So when they do a beautiful thing, tell them it's a beautiful thing. What do I mean? So the teenage girl who lovingly steps out of her comfort zone and tries to befriend the person who is being excluded, say to them, that was a beautiful thing you did. So use the language of beauty directed towards character. When our boys, who we hope are becoming men, do wonderful, positive, masculine things, really helpful and caring and servant-hearted to their mums, say to them, that was really good. You were acting like a man. Good job. And tell them. But we've got to reclaim the territory in some ways. Okay, too long on that point. Let's move on. They don't tend to play the long game. What do I mean by that? Everything in the world around them says, what I want to do now is what really matters. But actually, we need to train them to think, what I do now will have consequences. Revision is your classic example. Doing a little bit of work here may have an impact on exam day. Learning to do homework when it's set rather than the night before may have an impact on my grades. That's just one example. In the moment, what do they want to do? They don't want to miss the next episode of whatever TV programme they're into. In the moment, they won't choose always to do the right thing, which is why we need to train them. So age 13, I have no problem with saying, what homework have you got? When's it need to be in? Okay, what's the game plan? Get a bit of paper. Let's work out when you're going to do it. Brilliant. Off you go. Get it done. And it might be that they say, well, I've got a piece in for tomorrow, but my next bit's not till Friday, so I'm going to do this bit tonight and I'm going to do that Thursday night. That's fine. They have managed their time well and probably done less procrastinating than we do most of the week, so that's fine. So, but we're training them. I don't think the answer is that when they're 17, we are still sitting them down and saying, right, give me a list of all your homework, now let's make a plan. Now, if they are saying to us at 17, I'm having meltdown, I can't make my deadlines, I can't see the wood for the trees, help me make a timetable, that's brilliant. And that's where we want to be. That is completely different from, in a controlling way, saying, right, show me, and now let me tell you exactly what you're going to do. Because unless you plan to still do that when they leave home, get a job or go to university, they are going to just have a massive crisis at that point. Again, better they have a crisis in our care, better we coach them in our care than when they're outside of our care. So all those things are just worth thinking through, all things we need to help them with. And I just want to say, I don't say any of those things to scare us, but to equip us and help us. We can coach them through those things. The joy I have, and I had the comedy on Sunday night. On Sunday night, we the youth group meets here on a Sunday night after church. I stand here. They're not as polite as you. They talk and they get the phones out and I have to sort them out and all those kind of things. There will be people there and you look at them. You look at the 18-year-old and go, I remember you 5 years ago. How did that happen? And you look at the 13-year-old and you go, you're going to become like that one day. Phew. And somewhere in the middle, at different steps and stages, they get there. And they do get there. With our help, they get there. It's amazing what can change. It's amazing as well that we, at one level, I think I'll take any teenager on who argues with me on this one, we get the worst of them. I think that's the reality. We do get the worst of them. They know how they should interact with other people. They just forget to do it with us sometimes. And all those things are true, I think. So just be aware of that. I'll give you one comedy moment. We were on holiday at Easter, and one of our children, one of the boys, so allegedly not quite a teenager, but more or less there. Now you've nailed it down, so I might have to edit this. I will confess this to him later. Him and a cousin, who was a teenager, so now we're in the right zone, had decided that what you do when you go to bed at night in this farmhouse that you're renting is you use a beach ball to throw between the two beds. And then you realise that, oh no, it hit a light and broke it. Oh. Brilliantly, they confessed it to us the next morning, which I was chuffed to bits with. You know, I'm not sure that's what I would have done at their age, but they did. They came down and told us. I was on holiday, so I had enough sleep and I didn't lose the plot, so that was all right. So I said to them, well, when we leave today, we're going to go to reception and you're going to say what you did. Okay. And somehow, one of the boys who was there, who has the potential tendency to grunt slightly, stood in front of this receptionist and became this most articulate, polite child. And I was standing there next to his auntie and we were looking at each other going, where have we gained this child from? But it's true, they can do it. We don't always see it. Don't always be discouraged in the way they interact with us. Actually, coach them, help them. And out there in the real world, they don't do a bad job of it, to be honest. But it was a very scary moment to think your son had been abducted by aliens and replaced. But I'll confess that later, stroke edit it. We'll see how we go. Okay, let's think about top tips. Let's see how we go here. I think the first thing to say is don't write off the teenage years. Again, our culture doesn't help us. Our culture basically encourages us to think, no, it's all going to go wrong. And it doesn't have to be that way. Harry Enfield didn't help us. If you ever watched Harry Enfield back in the day, there was a character called Kevin, who was this lovely bouncy child. And on his 13th birthday, when the clock struck midnight, To quote them, he lost the power of rational thought and the use of his arms and just became this horrible teenager. Then you get kind of 18 and all of a sudden he reappears as a lovely kind of bouncy, lovely adult who wants to interact with his parents. But I think our culture thinks that somehow these are kind of wilderness years in which we can't help. And I think that's just rubbish, actually. They are now at the stage where we can have conversations and we can coach them. Doesn't mean it'll always be easy, but don't write them off. Again, just think, if you put teenage in front of anything, it generally means negative, doesn't it? Teenage driver. That doesn't sound very good, does it? But I think in our heads, that's what we've done. We've gone teenage, and we don't need to. Doesn't mean it's going to be easy, doesn't mean they won't have their struggles, doesn't mean we won't find it hard, but let's not write off those years. Personally, I think the better term is emerging adult. Again, just like caterpillars and butterflies, you know, takes a while to emerge sometimes, but let's work on emerging adult. I think that's what we're trying to do. Because I think teenage just sounds like a kind of static state in which you can't have any input and any help. But we're aiming at something bigger and better. So keep remembering the goal, which is the next point. We do want them to become mature and independent adults. Why do we need to remember it? Because I think it means that in the crisis, we are more inclined to think, how can we coach them, than just reacting emotionally. Again, nothing's changed, has it, in all the age and stage of parenting. When we react emotionally, rather than with control and wisdom and wise words, it doesn't lead to productive change. When we respond well, when it's not emotionally driven, we can really help them. So remember the goal. I've said it may be worth having a plan for the gradual transfer of responsibility. I did have it down as the gradual transfer of power, but that didn't sound very good. What do I mean by that? That doesn't mean that I'm saying, I'm thinking about things like money and their diary and timetable and all those kind of things. That doesn't mean that I'm saying, right, 15 and 2 months, you have an allowance now and you buy your own clothes. That doesn't mean age 16, I'm going to set you up on Google Calendar and off you go. I'm not saying you've got to be that clear, but it is just worth thinking. Age 18, I want them to be able to look after their own money, look after their own timetable, make wise choices in the shops, all those kind of things. So at some point, that needs to switch from me doing it to them doing it. And just thinking those things through. And sometimes they will make errors along the way, but that's fine. Because they're in your protective care and you can help them. But I do just think we need to be clocking the kind of things that they're going to need to be able to do themselves and work out how we get them there. So it's worth thinking those things through. Try and help them see that maturity leads to trust and responsibility. In some ways, this is just you're selling wisdom again. So just keep putting choices before them. Do they want us to treat them like they're still a toddler? Or would they like to be treated like a trustworthy teenager? Because we need to say to them, we will treat you based on how you respond to us. And we want to treat you as a trustworthy teenager. So keep putting it before them that with the right behaviour and character development, with the right responses, actually they will be trusted by us, respected by us, given more responsibility. Again, I think we say to them, you know, do you want coaching in a conversation or conflict and chaos? It's those kind of things. Now, sometimes they may not in the moment want to respond to either of those things, but just we're gently trying to say, what do you really want? In some ways, I think it's worth saying to them sometimes, you know, you want to be the kind of person that if someone said, would you write a reference? If you said to someone, would you write a reference for me? They could write a reference for you. But again, you're thinking character reference, not CV. You're not thinking A-star, 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 A-star. You're thinking trustworthy, honest, reliable, those kind of things. But just keep putting it before them. Do we want our sons and daughters to be people who can stand on their own two feet in the world, who can be productive in the world? Yes, of course we do. And we train them towards that, and we try and put that towards them as a goal as well. So we're aiming in the same direction in the midst of all the interactions, which aren't always easy. We mustn't underestimate the pressures they face. Peer pressure is huge. It always has been. The pressures to perform are massive at school particularly. I think school days being the happiest days of our lives, It's probably a lie for most kids. That isn't true. They might enjoy it. Some of them do. Some of them flourish. But some of them find it really hard. There are so many interactions every day. And they're not always interactions that give them joy and make them feel good about themselves. Sometimes they're horrid interactions. We've just got a clock. There's massive peer pressure and massive performance pressures out there. Which is why I think we need to try and make sure that our home is a refuge from those pressures. Don't add pressure at home if they're already feeling pressured. It also means we do need to think through all of the internet stuff and all the social media stuff and keep thinking about it. What do I mean by that? I don't mind putting my hands up saying I didn't really enjoy school that much. I was bullied a fair bit. I had the older, sporty, lean brother, and I was the kind of slightly fat, geeky kid. They have said it now publicly. And I was bullied a bit, and I hated it, and would come home, and I really, you know, would be upset on a regular basis through my teenage years. But I came home and did not have to have any interaction with any of those people who'd been nasty to me that day. Now think about teenagers today. Getting up in the morning, checking social media, instantly interacting, potentially interacting with the very people who they find difficult, or the very people whose approval they desperately seek, or finding out they weren't invited to something the night before, and they've just found out at 7 o'clock in the morning, whereas I wouldn't have found that out till 9 o'clock. Okay, there's 2 hours of peace that they've just lost. And it goes on through the whole day. So we've just got to watch that. Isn't me saying say no to social media. We've got to be wise and help them. And sometimes it is saying that's enough. And we've got to model it ourselves as well. If our home's going to be a refuge, there's got to be times when we're actually the interactions, the external interactions cease at some level. It's just worth saying, and I didn't have this on the notes, but it is worth saying as well, think back to our, and I'm not saying, you know, our kind of age of being, you're, most of you are younger than me anyway, but our age of being teenagers was amazing and fine and it was all, everything was great and it's all rosy. I'm not saying that, but when I wanted to organise something, I had to say, Mum, can I use the phone? It was one of those ones that kind of had a cable to it and buttons and everything. And it was in the dining room of the house, which was kind of connected to the kitchen. So I had to say, can I phone X to arrange to do Y? At which point parents lovingly, gently could say, but have you done your homework? Or they could lovingly, gently say, well, what are you actually going to get up to? What are you planning to do? Most parents are out of the loop of communication by 11 or 12. Now, what we've done there potentially is given away the opportunity to help our children with wise choices, communication skills, and all those kind of things. So we've just got to clock it. Because their 11 and 12-year-old friends won't be saying to them, that's a really silly thing you've just suggested on the, you've just suggested that we should do. Let's chat to a parent about it and see if that's the right thing to do. That's not how it works. So we've just got to clock those kind of things. Your children will think you're weird when you say things like, well, why don't I just phone their mum and check they're happy? And they will think you're weird and they might not like you for doing it. I promise you the other mum will probably love you forever because they were too worried. They didn't have the guts to say it. But it's amazing what happens when you actually step up and do those kind of things. Anyway, that wasn't on the notes, but it's worth thinking about all that kind of stuff as we go together. So in all of that, then the next thing is say, try and be part of their world. It may mean you've got to join Facebook if you're not on it. Although, to be honest, the average age of Facebook now is 45, I think. So most of them, when you say, yeah, you can have Facebook now, they're like, hey, thanks. Look, I'm going to hand over responsibility. Have Facebook. Great, my gran's on Facebook. Thank you. But Instagram, Snapchat, WhatsApp, just, we've got to join them and try and get our heads around them. They're always changing. Although behind the scenes, most of them are fundamentally the same. It is the culture of I, it is all about me, is the bad things behind them. Positively, they are about consolidating friendships and having good interactions. But we need to help them see the positives and the negatives and work through them. And to some extent, that means we've got to be on there as well. I get in trouble because I never like anything, but that's because I have a policy of going, it's just a lot easier that I'm not going to do that. But, you know, you can do whatever you like in that world. So, again, I think that means, being part of their world as well means, we need to know their friends. But again, that means their online friends. Think through those issues as well. So, do you generally want to know who their friends are? Yeah, I think so. Do you therefore want to know who their friends are online? Yeah, definitely. Don't let that be a whole part of their life that you don't understand or speak into. It's just worth thinking all of that through. Now, again, that doesn't mean that you want to be involved in every interaction. You don't, when they come in from school, sit them down and say, right, talk me through. How long do you have for lunch? 40 minutes. Right, tell me, who did you hang out with? What did you say? Exactly what happened? Who was talking about who? So don't then try and kind of become the kind of online policeman or policewoman. But just don't see it as somewhere that is off limits. Think it through. Chat it through with them. Again, think coaching. Just as I think when you first give a child a phone, you need to train them in the art of text message that isn't rude, isn't too abrupt, has the right tone, all those kind of things. I think we train them in the other interactions as well and just help them through those things. It's worth trying to encourage them to be wise. Get to know their friends, including their friends online. Just on that one, the government has good guidelines. The people who make the apps have good guidelines. Facebook is 13, Instagram is 13. The European Union even wants to make it 16 because they are worried about cyberbullying and stuff. There are schools in St Albans that have staff members who work at least half of their week just dealing with cyberbullying, and these are nice schools in St Albans. So just clock the issues out there, and we need to just try and help our kids, our teenagers, emerging adults with them. We've got to help them see that actions have consequences, because that's how the world works. Now, I think that means we mustn't always protect them from the consequences of their folly. That does mean sometimes they won't hand in an essay. Now, the minute we say that, we think we have just ruined their life and their potential performance, etc. Doesn't mean we don't help them. Doesn't mean there aren't times when at midnight we do drive to Tesco's and buy those ingredients that they need, or we do find someone else who's got some printer ink and help them. But sometimes, when with the best will in the world, they've had every opportunity and you've helped them with every opportunity to get it there and they still haven't got it there, then it may be they've got to suffer the consequence of that. And you stand with them in that and you don't stand there going, I told you so. But why is it worth doing that? Because actually, happening now in your protective care is better than happening when they fail to hand in a report at work because they didn't make a plan. Or they fail to get to their lectures at university because they haven't learned to control their own timetable. It's just worth thinking those things through. It feels horrible to do it. It's easier to say in principle than practice. But I do think it's just worth us thinking through how we help them in those situations. Better to mess up when we can help them pick up the pieces, I think, than learn later. Again, we need to talk to them about key stumbling blocks and coach them. Again, you could sit here now and caricature your average teenager, and you'd probably be right. Teenage boys particularly, do they have a tendency toward laziness? Yes. Is it worth saying, you're 13 now, the danger is the world around you is going to say, laziness is cool, we're going to say, laziness is for the fool, so let's not do it. And we're going to try and encourage them not to be lazy. So talk to them about key stumbling blocks, gossip. How many of our interactions with teenagers will be about trying to put friendships back together where gossip has destroyed them? Loads of them. So just help them see that those things are issues. I've put rapid fire communication. What do I mean? Again, it's partly an instant response age. But actually, how many friendships will they ruin, potentially, by just responding too quickly? Now, it happens in the real world. Responding too quickly when they're asked to do something by a grown-up and it gets them in trouble. Responding too quickly when someone says something hurtful, which they see on their phone. responding too quickly when actually someone says something nasty about someone else and they like it. And they've clicked the button and they can't get it back. Rapid fire communication is a massive issue and we need to help them with it. Okay, talk to others who have been there before you. Okay, just so you know, I've not yet met anyone who's got through the teenage years and said it was a total breeze, we never had any struggles, there were no problems. That may be what you see in their teenagers, but I promise you that's not what happened behind the scenes. Therefore, talk to other people who've been there before you, get their wisdom and get their help. Okay, potential pitfalls at speed, sorry, time's almost gone. Beware thinking they don't need parental authority and boundaries. They still do. They change. But they still need boundaries. They still like to know where they are. Be willing to say no to them out of love. Be the bad cop if you need to be. Doesn't matter if their friends think you are ridiculous. That doesn't matter. Doesn't matter if your teenager is quite content that their friends think that they're really cool, but your parents are so outdated. That doesn't matter. If you think it's the right thing to do, have the guts to do it. Saying no to them might make them blow up, but they will ultimately understand that you do love them and care for them. There are a number of teenagers in this church family who, when I've sat down with them before they've gone off to university and they've reflected on their teenage years, have said things like, I'm so glad my parents protected me from X. I'm so glad my parents said no to this. I'm so glad my parents helped me to handle this. Now, every now and again, I manage to convince them to actually say that to their parents, but that may never happen. But don't worry about it. But I promise you, they do clock it, even if they don't admit it to their parents. I think we need to beware the principle they need to learn from their own mistakes. What do I mean by that? They will learn from their own mistakes, and we need to help them with that. I think the world around us says, we all messed up, they need to mess up, it's how they learn. Well, that's learning the hard way. Part of what we train them to do in life is to watch the world around them, not in a judgmental way, but to see folly and go, I don't want to go there. So to see the friend who has become so addicted to online gaming that they never get any sleep, they're always falling asleep in class and now they're getting in trouble. And not to go, oh, I can't believe their parents have done that, but just to go, do you see why it's worth saying sleep's not a bad thing to do? Now, teenagers think sleep's a good thing to do, but they think it's a good thing to do in the hours between sort of 3 in the morning and lunchtime. We're trying to say, let's move that back a little bit. Beware blowing up when they open up. Imagine today a 16-year-old boy goes to his dad and says, Dad, I've been really struggling in the whole area of the internet. Help me. The dad has two options. He can either blow up or he can say, brilliant, let's talk about it. So if they come to us, what about the daughter who comes and says, I know we've had this rule as a family, but to be honest, I've been deceiving you and I've not been doing it. What do? We rejoice and we have the conversation. The temptation is we want to blow up. And we've just got to avoid that. Try not to get on a war footing. It's so easy, I think, in the teenage zone, just to get on a war footing, to kind of, they are emotionally charged, we become emotionally charged, and that's not coaching, it's just a crisis. So if we get on that footing, when we respond wrongly, say sorry and get on with it. Let's remember a few things. The first remembers just for me. Proverbs says, a man's wisdom gives him patience. It's his glory to overlook an offence. Your teenagers will offend you at times. You don't have to deal with every offence. Remember, the path to maturity is seldom smooth. Yeah, if it was a graph, it would be going up and down. It wouldn't be a nice linear progression. Remember to talk to others and get some wisdom. And just praise them when they make wise choices and show signs of maturity. Like every other stage, the danger, we're so worried about the negative, we forget to praise the positive. So keep praising the positive.